Cassie, do you know what day it is?
Why, it's...
It's Dalek Day, Cassie.
I was just... Give me a second to talk! Fuck!
It's legit rage.
Hey, Zach, guess what I'm doing?
What are you doing, Cassie?
I'm drawing a Dalek from memory.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed? I am your host, Zach, and I know a lot about Doctor Who.
And I'm also your host, Cassie, and I have a confession to make.
What's that, Cassie?
I really like 8.
Really like 8?
I miss him. I miss him already.
We think we might have found your doctor.
Maybe. Well, I'm just bummed out because I know that there is no more of him.
Yep, just some photo shoots from audio dramas. He gets like a little cameo, but you don't get to see that for many, many years.
I know.
And it really is like a cameo. It's not much.
I know. And you know I'm going to flip my lid, though. Spoiler alert. I do know. I do know things.
Yeah, I told her that.
No, I found it out on accident because I did the Tumblr thing where I was just like, this is so earnest. I did the thing where I was just like really excited because I was like, oh, a thing I really like now, because I, much like I did when I was a young girl in the tens. Mm-hmm. When I really like something, I like research it and I just like want to surround myself with pictures. And like at this point in time, it's if I really like something, I just look it up on Instagram and let the internet feed me the slop I so desire. Yeah. So, you know, so like when Baldur's Gate came out, it was all about Astarion for me. I realized after I was I'd gone to preview night for HHN this year. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh yeah, like I've gone like every year for the past like seven years or so. And then I went, no, I haven't, because the year that freaking Baldur's Gate came out, guess what I chose to do instead of going to the Spooky Time event? That's right, ladies and germs. I stayed home because I was in love. And so this time around, I went, you know, I'm just going to do Eighth Doctor. I want to try to find some art or something. I'm decorating the wall in our bedroom. And I thought, gee golly, wouldn't it be nice to have a Doctor Who themed art hanging up on the wall to go with my other whimsy and bullshit that I have up there? And what should I so find? But spoilers for myself, because in the pursuit of whimsy, I found spoilers instead.
Yeah, I told her that he shows up in the 60th anniversary, so we're not going to see him for another, I don't even know how many seasons, but it'll be a little bit. But yeah, he gets a little cameo.
So I might forget.
Yeah.
I might.
Yeah, you might forget. And you might get excited all over again.
Yeah.
But something about curly haired British boys between Astarion and the Eighth Doctor. Light curly
something,
hair.
Something about people having my same haircut just really.
You could see yourself in them.
Yeah.
And you could see them in you.
Your mother listens to this podcast.
And she'll think that joke's hilarious. But we are going to go all the way back to the first Doctor today.
Back to the beginning.
Yeah, this is our journey all the way back to the beginning of Doctor Who. The second ever story featuring your nasty boys, the Daleks.
Yay!
And you know, because the story is called The Daleks.
Yay!
I think it's also called The Dead Planet and the Mutants. Before the Daleks became like a big thing, they had given it a more...
These Daleks are thwarted by stairs.
Yeah, they haven't quite figured out how to elevate yet.
My wiggle men.
This is the first time they ever appear on television, right before causing what we now know as Dalek Mania.
Good.
Which is
Dalek Mania? I imagine that was primarily in the UK, not so much in the U.S.?
Yes, I believe so. Well, especially because the show didn't come to the U.S. immediately. The show was broadcast in the U.K., and so in the U.K. it really happened. After watching this one, you will have seen at least a story featuring every Doctor up to where we are in the main series.
Hooray!
You'll have seen 1 through 11. I'm personally really excited for this. It is a much longer story than I remembered it being when I put it in the calendar. I don't know why I remembered it only being 4, maybe 6 episodes. It's 7.
That's what they typically are.
Yeah, most episodes of the classic series are 4 episodes. This one happens to be 7.
So how are we going to break it down?
Well, I think what we might do is we might watch the first 4, and then we'll do a midpoint, and then we'll watch the last 3.
Okay.
Just because if memory serves correctly, the 4th episode, because it was too long for me to do a preview like I normally try to do when I'm doing all my notes. So I just had to go off my memory. And I believe there's a, not like a breaking point, but there is like a, okay, we're at a decent
point. There's an intermission.
This is a point in the story where we can step back and talk about it.
We can do like they do in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, and for 15 extra minutes listen to the intro music of the thing we are watching.
God, I wish movies would do that again sometimes.
Me too.
Ugh. I understand why they don't.
Just so I can make my way to the lobby.
Let's all go and get coffee. Let's all go to the potty.
Let's all go and get lollies. AKA a treat.
But yeah, we're going to go back to the Daleks. I originally had thought it might be fun if we went back and watched the first episode, the first story of Doctor Who.
You can't not give me a Dalek story. We have not seen a Dalek
in a minute. Yeah.
In many moons.
Yeah, it was the beginning of the first season, but we haven't watched one in a minute. So, and we heard them in the TV movie, but they didn't. You don't see them.
That doesn't count.
Yeah.
That doesn't count. They were using the little alien megaphones. You did not give me
I
Nick.
Also didn't feel like doing an Earthly Child because so the rights to that episode belong to the son of the writer, and he sucks. He has not given the BBC the rights to include the first story on the iPlayer. Which is, so basically, that's the only story of classic Doctor Who the British people can't watch without having to purchase it somewhere. Which, you know, that's not really the problem. The problem, and he says it's for money reasons. The problem that I have is that it really seems like it's not for money reasons. It seems like he might be either racist, homophobic, or both. Because he says they're not paying him enough for the rights. But he also is lambasting the show when Inchutigatwa got cast as the Doctor, as like his father is spinning in his grave over this whatever. And I was like, that all you know about Inchutigatwa is that he's gay and black. So you have a problem with one of those two things. You don't know anything about his portrayal otherwise at the time. It really seems like he just is withholding the episode because he doesn't like the Doctor Who went quote unquote woke, which is so stupid.
Irrespective, we are not watching the first ever episode because of reasons. I get a feeling that this episode is going to be very long.
This is going to be much longer. This
spoiler alert, as if you don't already see the timestamp of how long this episode is.
Well, I'm kind of hoping that I'm certainly not going to do another recap. We're just going to have to talk about our thoughts because the recap.
I mean, we can just do how about we do this? While we are watching each and every episode, we will do just bullet point, like, things to discuss, not elaborate, thought out, drawn out notes.
Yeah, we'll just...
Because as far as I know, there is nowhere to watch this.
This is on Tubi.
It is on Tubi.
Yeah.
Never mind. You can watch it for
classic
free.
Series is still on Tubi. And actually, if you go to the first Doctor on Tubi, this is the first story that pops up because of the reason
I
just mentioned.
Well, then you're welcome, everybody who wants to follow along at home.
Yeah, so we're going to I have the DVD collection for this section.
Because
so.
You are special brain.
Because I'm a dork.
where do I want to start with on this? So this is The Daleks, written by Terry Nation. The first time the Daleks ever come on the air. Because we're not watching that first story, you're not going to get a proper introduction to our three companions. So I will give you a little bit of that rundown here. If you look at the image here on our screen, the small girl on the right, her name is Susan Foreman, and she is the Doctor's granddaughter.
Okay, cool.
And by Susan Foreman, that's the name she goes by. She has had, people have attributed that to being a name that she took on when she was pretending to be a human, because basically, so the story begins with her pretending to be a student at high school. And the two people to her left are Barbara Wright and Ian Chesterton, her history and science professors, teachers, respectfully. They taught at Cold Hill High School, and they were both mystified by this young woman who seemed to know more than even they did in their classes. And so they choose to follow her home and find out what's up with her. And they follow her to basically like a junkyard almost, where she walks into a police box. And they think that she is being held captive or tied up or locked inside of the police box. And so Ian and Barbara run their way into what we know, you and I know, as the TARDIS, have their "whoa, what is this" moment
as they're running inside of a white box.
Yeah. And then the first doctor is a little bit, despite his age, is a little more childish than the other doctors, even more so than I think we think about sometimes, because Bill Hartner was in his 50s. And he immediately is like, "You two have broken into my house," and basically dematerializes the TARDIS and takes them all to caveman times.
To the land of the... What a crossover that would have been, huh?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, you're not wrong. And at the end of that story, they are running away from the cavemen, and a caveman spear flies into the TARDIS and dematerializes our group elsewhere, but even the doctor has no idea where. So part of the premise of this was that when they pitched it to the BBC is that it would be partly an educational series, that, you know, it would be through space and time. And okay. So you would learn a little about history when they went back in time, or you would learn a little bit about science when they went somewhere else in the universe.
It feels like the show that wouldn't necessarily be the, like, I'm going to show this in my history class. Like, yeah. what we would think now, but this would be the catalyst for somebody saying, "Oh, Pompeii, I'd like to learn more of that, please.
Yeah.
Let me go to my local library and get every book I can about Mount Vesuvius and Pompeii."
Yeah, so that's why they have two teachers in it. They have Ian, who is the science teacher, and Barbara, who is the history teacher. That way they could convey these subjects when they're exploring their different avenues. That idea for the show was basically immediately waylaid by how popular this story was. They immediately went, "Oh, this is not the show anymore. The show is a sci-fi action adventure series. It is not going to be an educational series."
Could you imagine, though, if it had gone an educational series, maybe some point we would have had a Dr. What, a Dr. Why, Dr. Where.
We would have had a doctor played by LeVar Burton.
We would have had two
reading TARDIS.
I was going to say we would have had two doctors that were actually lion puppets made by the Henson Company.
Just two companions that are Bert and Ernie.
Oh, I was talking about Between the Lions.
I knew you were talking about Between the Lions. I was sorry. I was doing another, like, yes and this. I realized that may have been too similar because they're both Henson.
Yeah, I was like, okay, I didn't know that Bert and Ernie were also lions, but...
I can't keep up on all the gay terminology.
Have a look Between the Lions. Anyways.
But let's not belabor it too much longer. Let's get into the Cassie Professy a little bit here.
Also, for the record, now, if anybody's keeping track, which I don't think anybody is, but in case, last episode did throw a little bit of a monkey wrench into our count because Zach decided to give me 4 questions instead of the standard 2.
Well, the good news is we'll make it up. We'll make it up somewhere because there's an episode in the future where we won't be able to do Professy questions because it's just this story again.
Fair enough. So for right now, I am at, out of 214 guesses, I am at 138 correct.
Alrighty. Well, let's do our Cassie Professy for this episode. I had a difficulty coming up with it because it's such a long story and I didn't want to spoil too much of it. But also I had to go entirely off my memory because I couldn't sit here and binge 3 hours of Doctor Who to get the story in place.
Oy vey, 3 hours?
It's like 170 minutes, I think. But
buckle up, kids.
Yeah, and we'll patch over some of that.
I guess that's also the amount of time that, like, Infinity War.
Yeah, and then we'll also skip some of that because some of it's like credits post beginning.
You know, I saw Endgame in theaters. I see it was like 5 or 6 times.
Yeah, I know you saw it at least 4 times because I told you that I saw the first Avengers 3 times and you went, "I gotta beat that." It was early in our relationship.
Yeah, I saw it a lot.
But speaking of the intro, though, you get to hear this is an episode with Delia Derbyshire's theme in it.
Yeah, we're doing a whole lot of Cassie favorites here. So to do the Cassie prophecy here, both of these will be answered in the first episode, so we don't have to belabor these points too long. So I'll say when the TARDIS lands on Skaro, which is the Dalek homeworld, the Dalek homeworld, as we know, it lands in a forest that has been transformed. Is the forest A, frozen over, B, turned to metal, or C, turned to stone?
Oh no.
Is the forest as dead as a stone?
I did have the brief thought of, the forest is petrified.
Mm-hmm.
So,
a couple of those, like, all three of those options are sort of that.
Mm-hmm. What would read in black and white?
Mm-hmm.
Because this is in black and white.
Mm-hmm.
And also, what is not expensive?
Because you got to remember, it's the 60s, 1963, where all television was made with whatever, however many coins they could fit in a coffee cup.
Cardboard and spray paint. I'll give them some credit. Plywood and spray paint. So my options were frozen, metal, or stone.
Mm-hmm. Everything is chrome in the future.
Because I am leaning more metal. Well, because these are like proto Dalek.
Mm-hmm.
These are uncharted Dalek.
Yeah. Other things that haven't, like, we haven't seen Daleks before. Time Lords have not been mentioned yet. Time Lords don't get mentioned until the end of the second Doctor's run. Gallifrey, not been mentioned yet. The Doctor doesn't even have two hearts yet. That's how, like, they basically, so at some points this first Doctor has his heart examined and no one comments on the fact that he has two hearts. So it's been basically accepted as headcanon that Time Lords don't get two hearts until their first regeneration entirely because of that.
I'm going to say metal. I don't want to belabor this too much.
Okay. So you think they've been turned to the forest has been turned to metal?
I mean, yeah, I don't have anything to go off of other than a whim.
This is a Cassie tea leaf reading. But one that I think might be a little more fun for you is the other prophecy point today. What is the first part of a Dalek that we see? Because I'll tell you up front. My mom listens to this podcast.
Yeah, she's going to love that. That's a callback to, I think, that I know I've made that joke before at some point.
Yeah, we talked about the Cybermen, and I said part of the Cybermen was visible, and you said it's dick. So I will tell you up front, we don't see the full Dalek at first. We just get a little preview of one part of it.
We just see a little bit of peen.
Just the tip.
I'll stop. One part of the Dalek first, either his little hand or the eye stalk.
Which little hand? Because he's got two. He's got the egg whisk and he's got the plunger.
I drew one. And I drew it as one of those grabbies that you get if you are in a wheelchair or at a claw machine.
There's like that egg whisk laser and there's also the plunger.
Can I ask how we see it? Like, is it silhouetted or is it?
It is.
Is it like coming around a corner?
So basically in the frame, it's hard to describe without totally giving it away in a way. Basically, the frame just cuts part of it off. So only part of it is coming into frame.
Okay, coming into frame.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say eye stalk then.
The eye stalk? Okay.
I think so, because I'm going to be really mad if I say plunger and then you go, oh, it was whisk. Ooh, you get the point for that. But if I say eye stalk and I'm very wrong, then shit.
All right. Alrighty. Anything else that you're excited to see?
I'm so excited to see them get all wiggly. I'm excited to see them get all wiggly. I'm excited to hear what they sound like.
Yeah, because you haven't heard the only real, like, classic Daleks we've seen, I think, were in Genesis of the Daleks. And even then, they didn't speak all that much. Oh my fucking God, I'm blanking on his name.
I see him so clearly in his little like baby scooter.
Davros. We mostly only heard Davros, who definitely still had some of that vocal effect on him, but it wasn't the same.
Well, yeah, but it was not.
It wasn't this.
It was not as crunchy.
Well, let's find out what we sounded like in 1963. I'm wiggling.
I don't think they announced what they would be doing, Zach.
They announce what they're doing all the time, Cassie. Exterminate, exterminate.
Egg stir and bake. Exfoliate. Extrapolate.
Exsanguinate.
Ooh.
Defenestrate. That's when they throw the doctor out a window.
Is that what that means?
Yeah, defenestration means being thrown out a window.
Huh.
And we'll learn more facts like that on a very educational Who Is My Doctor?
When is indeed.
You know, folks, we've had a lot of fun here making fun of the man car, but we actually have a very serious message for you, brought to you by the man car in his own words. Take it away. Back to the episode. And we are back from the first four episodes of The Daleks. So what you thinking so far, Cassie?
So today on Doctor Who, I learned about pacifism, the theory of evolution, and how to manipulate your friends into doing the thing that you want to do.
And how to make mud.
And how to make mud.
And static electricity that comes from the floor and powers little Dalek tanks.
Yeah. And how to fake a fight.
All kinds of useful skills taught to you by Doctor Who.
Thanks, BBC.
So we're about a little more than halfway through it now. We just finished episode 4 of 7. How are you feeling so far? The pacing of it is definitely a lot to get over.
Here's the thing is, I don't mind the pacing so much just because each episode is pretty truncated.
Yeah, every episode's about 20 to 25 minutes.
It's okay. I'm actually enjoying it as indicated by how few notes I've taken.
Mm-hmm.
But also, we've entered into the time of day where I start to get a little bit eepy. It's my self-defense against the hot.
Yeah.
Is to lay on the ground and fall asleep. Which I want to do so badly.
Cassie beats the heat by crawling into a cave.
I beat the heat by literally turning into a little lizard.
Finding a cold rock.
If I make myself as flat as I can, then the heat can't see me.
But are the original Nasty Boys everything you hoped they were going to be?
They don't get as wiggly when they're angry, but I am so happy that they went, this design was perfect.
I mean, there's something incredible about it. It just seems it immediately took off. Like, I don't think it took the second episode, because the second episode is the first one where you see all of them, but immediately after that, I don't know what it is exactly that, like, people latched onto.
I don't know.
Maybe they're just the right comp, the, like, perfect mix of, like, serious and stupid. You know what I mean? Like, there's something.
Well, because we were kind of already having a discussion about how this really took off in the UK. This is, BBC's UK. And there is something militant about the Daleks that I'm really trying to figure out, like, is there something to be said of, or is there some kind of quality of a post-war world where these enemies literally come rolling into the scene and they sound a little silly and their weapons are a toilet plunger and an egg beater, where maybe it's just a, like, oh, space Nazis, but dumb.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, is like, there is something when you get to something being a level of doofy like having a plunger for an arm and an egg beater laser for the other.
It's got two little light bulbs on its head to indicate when it knows something.
Yeah, when it has two ideas. I think there's something about it, like when something reaches this level of like, this is too specific for it to be stupid. So it must actually be really important to them. You know what I mean?
But on the flip side, too, like when we've seen other alien races, they are humanoid. This is the first thing we've seen that is not humanoid whatsoever. It's not a man in a suit, although it is.
Yeah.
A man in a suit.
Yeah, but when
that's
they
rolling around, but it's not. It is not. There is no there is no suspension of disbelief. I feel like it's the same equivalent as like. Yeah, that's a fair comparison. It's the same equivalent as like people going gaga over R2-D2, but liking and having an appreciation for C-3PO, but just saying, oh, that's very clearly a man in a suit. There is something about R2-D2 and then all other droids to come after that, that for whatever reason, us as people go, oh my God, I need to protect that. That's a little baby. I'm not saying Dalek is a little baby.
It's a little guy, as we've established.
Yes. All I'm saying is that all droids are little guys.
Well, it's also, we get that moment where they pop open the Dalek and they have to take it out. And whatever it is, I mean, we know what it is now with the modern series and everything. But back then, all you see is them basically like scoop something up out of the Dalek that's about the size of a baby. And then just drop it on the floor. And then we just get like a little bit of its like mutated hand sort of sliding out under the blanket. That's all we see of it. Otherwise, all we get is the Dalek tanks. There is like a little bit of mystery to them. Where you're like, what are they?
They're captivating.
Yeah. You're like, what are they? They act very strange. Not in like a clowny way, but they all talk in monotone. Like now they have like these really like emotional extremes, but back then they just spoke like this.
Which there is also something to be said that there was no closed captioning. We are watching subtitles. But there is something to be said of like, as we're watching this, I'm going, ah, it's so nice to have my ADHD sated by having subtitles on the TV screen. But you had even made the point when we very first put this on, this was not intended to be watched on a screen that is the size of 4 fourth graders stacked on top of each other, laying down. You know, TV screens are 12 by 12 inches.
Yeah, they're the size of a laptop.
Yeah.
It's like watching on a very blurry iPad. But you can't even really get close to it because it's a huge box at the same time. So
you can get up close, but then you'll have your mom yelling at you from the back to not sit so damn near close to the TV or else you're going to burn your eyes out. So there is something of like this is something that can be viewed from far away.
Yeah.
That has a different and unique sound, is not like anything else that you have ever seen on television, because at this point you haven't seen a lot on television.
Yeah, when you watch that little like hand slither out, like we can clearly tell that's like a hand in a costume, but I imagine if it was smaller and blurrier like it would have been back in those days, you don't that is.
Do you know what that reminded me of? That little like hand, the little hand that we keep circling back to?
What's that?
Have you seen it? I know that this is not your bag. Other people will get it. Any sort of like UFO paranormal video of like, I caught this on my Ring camera and it's like very low res. Oh, there is one, though, that I saw. It was legitimately scary in the fact that it was somebody doing a backbend, but they had a mask that they were wearing on, had a mask that was like flipped the other way on their face.
Okay.
But the video itself, those like, I'll just refer to it as a creature, did not cast a shadow. And I went, huh, that's a super, like, I know that this is all fake, like this. You see that you are running away. You are not capturing video of this horrifying pipe monster because they're like, you know, where, like, by, like, large industrial pipes and this, like, thing is crawling out. But there is something about those types of videos that resonates with me in this moment, seeing that little, like, sticky hand. There's no face. There's nothing else attached to it. It is just this little, like, creature monster. And then that makes your imagination and gears start going of, oh, what the fuck is that?
Yeah.
How is it working on the inside? My curiosity now is piqued.
Yeah.
What, how are they? They're referring to all of the jungle daddies as the mutants.
The falls. Yes. The
jungle daddy, jungle daddies and jungle mommies.
Yeah. You had talked earlier about a few minutes ago about having to suspend your disbelief for aliens, and the only thing that makes the Thals alien is that they are all
wearing football.
They're all wearing football gear, and they're all blonde and pale. that's literally a casting choice for the Thals, is they are all blonde.
The way that we're like, yeah, space Nazis. Anyways, let's get back to the Thals. You know, the Aryans.
Yeah, which is it's an interesting choice, especially considering, you know, the thing that they say that the Daleks, the way they get to this is that Ian, of all people, is the one who's like, well, it could be the Daleks just have a really basic, understandable reason for wanting to kill you. And that's just fear of the unlike. They just don't like you because you're not like them. And that has catapulted them for 60 years in pop culture. Was just Ian going, I don't know, maybe they're just like Nazis. Speaking of our main people, how do you feel about the first Doctor? I know you've had a few episodes of him.
In my defense, for like three of these episodes, he was literally almost dead. He was asleep.
And in the first episode, he was just being stinky.
Oh my god! Because I don't think that this is a term. I don't even believe that this is like an internet term I've picked up. This is a term that we've used exclusively for our cat, Monty, because he is both stinky in execution. He is a very smelly cat, but also he just has.
He likes to get up to stuff.
He's mischievous.
He's got a scheming behavior about him. He's a
scheming little man, very scamp like. Yeah. So anything that is very scamp like, a little mischievous, a little fey, is stinky.
He's being stinky.
This doctor is being stinky.
Yeah.
He's being so stinky, he says, oh, no. Oh, jeez. Oh, man, guys. Oh. There's a part of the TARDIS, you know, this machine that you don't understand how it works, but I know everything about it. I've had it now for one whole episode. There's a part, it leaked all over. You can't see it, but we need to fix it or else we can't fly anywhere.
I need mercury, so it can't be anything normal. It's got to be mercury specifically. So
No, I don't have any extra mercury on this ship.
I don't suppose any of you have any broken thermometers on you, do you?
Oh, you don't? Oh, man, I guess we have to go and explore some more.
Explore that really cool city that is
so unbelievably far away from where our ship is. But I've now written myself into a hole where I can't just transport us to the city because I've lied and said that the ship is broken.
Anyway, let's go for a little walk and see if we can find ourselves some mercury.
We need a laboratory.
And I enjoy that.
Zach, have you ever once been driving through a city going, oh, fuck, I need a laboratory?
Does anyone know where the nearest lab is?
Excuse me, I'm looking for science. Hello.
And I really enjoy Bill Hartnell playing it almost like a little kid behind Ian. When Ian's like, I guess we'll have to go into the city to get mercury. And the doctor's like, oh, I guess you're right, Ian. I guess we have to.
Stinky! Oh, speak of the devil.
And we got Susan, who's definitely more of like at least at this point, she's definitely more of like our traditional female companion in that she spends a lot of time screaming and asking for the doctor.
And this is the one time that I will come in and defend and say that is literally her grandfather.
Yes.
This is not a man that she has just found somewhere. And the two other are literal guardians, are people that in this particular instance, are viewing themselves as her guardians because they went, what the fuck is happening? Because, like, not like I had teachers just like that, but I definitely had a handful of teachers who, like, I was very close with because I spent a lot of time in classes with them, doing extracurriculars, and just, like, I had a teacher that absolutely, when things were bad, and she'd be like, do you need me to drive you home? Do you just need, like...
You good?
Yeah, I'm like, this is me checking in with you and being very professional about it, but also being like, hey, queen, I'm going to spend a little extra time with you because I can tell that you're going through something.
Yeah, I definitely like that this story has two real strong dynamics built up, and that is that Barbara really cares for Susan and Ian is really mad at the doctor.
Yes. I also really like that it's balanced.
Yes.
You have Barbara and Susan, and then you have Ian and the doctor.
Yeah, I do like that quite a bit.
And Barbara and Ian are both intelligent individuals.
Yeah.
You know, they don't necessarily know what's going on because they literally started this yesterday of flying through time and space. I would be a little disoriented as well.
Yeah.
But they aren't like, oh, no, doctor, I have no idea what's going on.
No, they come up with plans and they have ideas and they...
And they get mad at the doctor for being stinky.
Yeah, and they when they all get the radiation sickness, they all have some sort of like a brave face that they have to put on because they all know that they're with who they perceive as a literal child in Susan. And so I appreciate
that. I think that at that point they just kind of look at Susan as an adult who is still cooking. She is an underbaked adult.
Yeah. I do like that the little bit we get of the doctor is that he is a little mischievous. We describe him as a little stinky, but it is very much like I want to go to the city because I want to know what that place is like.
I want to explore. I'm here. I don't know how I'm going to get here again because I don't know how we got here in the first place.
Yeah.
So at the very least, I just want to know what's happening here.
Yeah, especially
the
like
forest that we're in is made out of stone.
Mm-hmm.
How'd that happen?
Yeah, it's a really strong difference to compare him to 11 because with 11, you know, he'll like take Clara to a place and he's like, oh, look at this cool little bazaar with a special meeting.
This doctor is...
This doctor hasn't done all that traveling yet. He's still early in his career. Yeah. And so there's a part of him where it's like, oh, you get the like curiosity. Meanwhile, we get to like 9, 10 and 11. And there's like a hero complex to them where they want to be like a good person who saves the day, does the right thing. Meanwhile, this doctor's just like, no, fam, I want to go down there. Fuck what y'all want. Like, I know you guys want to get home, but I want to go check out the city and I'm the pilot. So
and I have a time machine so I can drop you back off right where you left off. You won't miss a thing.
Yeah, there is very much like the parent like who's driving the car. It's just like, this is my car and what I say goes.
Yeah, we'll stop at McDonald's.
I mean, I don't want us to belabor too many points just because we still got more of the story to finish. But
overall, first impressions so far are I'm not hating it.
Yeah, I think this is also, I think, one of the best episodes of early Doctor Who, period. Like there's some that get real cheesy and dumb, and we might watch some of those. In fact, I have one on my short list for you for a bit. But I think there's a lot of really good framing devices in it. Like when we first see the Dalek, we all we see is the plunger arm driving towards Barbara. And she just lets out a scream and that's all you get. And they were left with that for a week.
Very like Universal Monsters.
Yeah, very Universal Monster. But like all the kids that watched that went home or were at home and spent the next week having to figure out what the heck that arm was. Was it an arm? What's the rest of it look like?
Mm-hmm.
Why was she screaming so bad? I think that's really interesting. And we also can address both your Cassie Professy points here a little early.
Yeah.
The forest was, in fact, turned to stone. But there was a little metal lizard dog. Little metal lizard dog.
I wrote it down as an iguana.
I think they
it's the only one that they've seen and have called out.
They called it a mega. I think the Thals called it a megaton is what they eventually called it. And then, you know, as I just said, at the end of that, the end of the first episode, we do, in fact, see a little like plunger hand coming at them. So it wasn't the eye stalk. However, as we're watching this on the DVD, at the very, very beginning, before the episode starts playing, they show a little clip from each episode or from each serial. And in the middle of that, there is a spinning Dalek head whose eye stalk is fully visible. And I had not considered to include that when I wrote that question down.
I mean, if you want to give me a point as a "all you poor thing,"
I will say that counts for 3/4 of a point, and then the metal dog counts for another 1/4 of a point. So together, they have formed a whole point for you.
Gee, thanks, bud. You misled me, though, because you kept on repeating the SpongeBob quote about how everything's going to be chrome. So I went, oh,
Zach's
bone. You must have put in the one about being stone, because that's one of our favorite things to say around the house is it says it is a stone. Yeah. So I went, oh, that's just you being cute. Ha ha ha. But you keep bringing up the chrome thing. So I'm taking that as a hint. I'm doing the thing that I usually don't do and listening to you.
Which is really your first mistake. You should never trust anything I do or say.
I mean,
I much like this doctor, am a little stinky. Anyway, I'm giving you a point.
I will accept your pity point, Zach. Thank you for that.
I hope you enjoy your pity point party.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have any parasites for the back half here, so we don't have to worry about any of those. Let's just see. Let's just see how this Dalek story turns out. Let's see how the Doctor and company are going to get out of this one.
Yeah, I will say the only thing I don't like is that this is so early on, very lore heavy.
Yeah, I do.
Good grief.
There's a moment I do like where they get Ian inside the Dalek tank and he's like, I can't figure out how to move these. There's too many buttons. And so they have to push the Dalek around the like Dalek tank with Ian around inside it. Like it's weekend at Dalek Bernie's. I'm picturing a Dalek Bernie Sanders.
Oh, geez. Zach, will you do the honors?
I am once again asking you to exterminate this soup.
A Jewish Dalek.
No, specifically Bernie Sanders. I'm not going to do a Jewish Dalek because that's effectively doing a Jewish Nazi. And that's going to be a big problem. Yeah. That's a big no.
Well, no, I'm just saying that's effectively what we're getting with this.
Yes.
I'm just imagining that one Bernie Sanders meme of him sitting cross-legged in the little foldy chair with his mittens.
Mm-hmm.
But as a Dalek. It's just a Dalek wearing little mittens.
All right. Well, let's finish up this story and we'll be back in just a few minutes.
Oh, I mean, it'll be a long time for us, but it'll be
like 10 seconds for you guys.
Yep. You get to listen to the music, though. Huh?
Enjoy this music that I made myself. And we are back from the Daleks. What did you think of the Daleks, Cassie?
I liked them.
I like the reverb that yours has.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was, I think, a pretty good episode of a television, if you want to see what they look like in color.
In color!
Yeah, we're looking at the gallery that they have on the DVD set here. So we get to see what that looked like to them in real life, as opposed to just on black and white on television.
Whoa. I forget things have color.
Yeah, I think that was a pretty good time. I think the story is about one episode too long.
Yes.
Specifically that episode where for some reason they really want you to see literally everyone jumping across the chasm. I didn't need to see everybody do that.
Yeah, I can't agree more.
Yeah, like
I have no justification for it.
That episode totally takes the like wind out of it. Like it feels like it's like it is a little bit of a pacing thing, but it's also 60s television. There's always going to be a little bit of a pacing thing. Just that's the way time marches forward. But God, if that those first five episodes aren't immediately just like crushed by the one episode of them like, all right, your turn now. All right, you made it. And now your turn.
I genuinely think it was Terry Nation wanting to end an episode on a literal cliffhanger.
Yeah, it really seemed like it. I don't know if there was some like mandate for it to be seven episodes. And so he just really padded one out because that ultimately the only thing that really happens is one guy falls off the cliff and we don't. And it wasn't even like one of the important guys. It was just one of the important guys' brother.
Yes. But earlier we had seen him wanting to turn back and having doubts, and I had made a note of it just because it did feel so unimportant.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, we got to a point where there was one plot, but then there were several different groups supporting that plot.
Yeah.
To the point where it was like, this is confusing.
A little bit. Yeah, because they all have their own little goal to achieve the same larger goal. And just maybe it would have been different if we had like watched it more spaced out, because these episodes are meant to be watched. They were written to be watched a week apart, not binged through start to finish. They just weren't designed for that.
No.
Now, I think it's an incredible testament to how well they are written that so much of it can be binged and you're like with it, like no questions.
Yeah.
It's just on board. Like the first four episodes, I think, especially, like you're just there, you're present for them. And that's because they all have something really unique in them, from the introduction of the Daleks being just that little being just the hand to the fifth episode, where one of the first things we see is the Daleks spinning around in sickness.
Help me.
I think Cassie just said that one of her new favorite things is specifically Daleks in distress.
Yeah,
because they have a few of those where what does he says near the end where it, like he just like kicks the Dalek for some reason. He goes, ah,
yeah.
At one point, there's a Dalek just like wailing sadly.
Yeah, it's literally a Dalek screaming out, and not in the way that we're used to see or hearing Dalek screaming out.
Yeah, not angry murderous. It's like it's like a child that just been kicked on the playground.
It's a pathetic, childish. It's the Dalek equivalent to the Lucille Ball like cry.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting how you can map a lot of just production changes in the show as like character development for the Daleks. Like back then, if you looked at the credits, there are four different actors playing the Daleks.
Yeah,
I believe they are all also driving, maybe not driving, but I believe they are in the tanks and they are doing the voice for them. By the way, there are four different performers for the Daleks as opposed to now, where they're all voiced by Nicholas Briggs. And so in the idea that these creatures are so opposed to things being different, that they are now all the same actor on top of everything else. Yes. I think that's a very interesting bit of meta narrative.
What's nice about seeing them in this context is they are still new.
Mm-hmm.
Like these Daleks have not become full-on space Nazis. They're still kind of bumbling through what they want.
Yeah, they're on their own planet. They're living underground in their city because they can't venture out. A lot of their, like, they have a lot of weaknesses. Like, the Doctor even points out a lot. Like, they're kind of slow. They have to travel along these, like, metal floors because they are powered actively by the electricity off the floors. So they have
They can't take stairs.
They can't take stairs, so they have lifts everywhere to take them up and down.
God, these Daleks love elevators.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting that these creatures are built in with a lot of weaknesses that just the era of... As eras of the show have gone on and the Daleks have gotten more popular, they have themselves had to get bigger and better. Like you think a Dalek now literally erases a bullet before it hits them like this.
Well, yeah, because even these Daleks, when they shoot something, it's non-lethal. It can be lethal.
Yeah.
But I like the justification of they have such a finite amount of power that they can use.
Yeah.
And most of that power is being used simply to control them.
Mm-hmm.
But they do not have the same amount to completely eradicate a person's skeleton through their body. These ones can just kind of impede your movement for a little bit.
Yeah.
Or they give you a solid kick in the nuts.
Yeah. Or they stick you in a room. They don't kill you. They just stick you in a room with a camera on you, like just regular old prison guards. Like that's, and it makes sense that they're not like ultra powerful when you consider the fact that they're, main opposition on the planet are pacifist farmers.
Yeah.
Like there was
a pacifist pretty people.
Yeah. There was a war.
I didn't see them farm. Not one thing.
Well, that's how they get those big arms. Yeah, Cassie.
Okay.
That's why they're also so muscular and strong.
Yeah. Although okay.
You think with farmers, they would stay outside long enough to gain something of a tan and not be actively reflective of the lights.
It's a new hobby for them. They are recent homesteaders.
Yeah, so there's a lot that like works retroactively with them. We're like this. They haven't even set off their planet yet. They can't even really get out of this city.
They can't leave underground.
Yeah, but to know where they go is to be the only species capable of fighting the Time Lords.
Yeah,
that they go on to learn how to travel in time and space, and they have. Revolutions in technology, all because they are driven by hatred. There's a part that's weirdly compelling.
They're so petty.
Yeah. Well, oh God. What was some of the ones that they did that really? There were some that got you. I thought. I don't know if you wrote even
in this.
Yeah. One of my favorites is they're like holding up the note to Susan, and they're like, "What is this word at the end of the message, Susan?" And then Susan goes, and they go, "Stop that noise!" I mean, it's not quite that excited because it's because they're much more monotone, these Daleks.
Still.
There's also, you know, come to think of it, an interesting dynamic that plays against the Cybermen, whereas the original Cybermen were very human. Like you had mentioned, you had sort of guessed back when we watched our last Cyberman classic story. I had said part of them was exposed and you'd mentioned little human hands. The original Cybermen did have visible human hands.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a part of it where they have gotten less human with time until now they're svelte little toys.
Yeah.
Svelte little toy.
I forgot how snatched they were.
Snatched waist little toys.
Dalek never changes.
Yeah, Daleks don't really change.
I mean, they change in color because we have these ones are silver and now we have Kia Soul, the Dalek.
Yeah. They're different. They can sometimes be these rainbow colors, but otherwise the most that they change is like they get kind of bigger. Like those leaderships get kind of bigger, but for the most part, Dalek is Dalek.
Physically speaking, Dalek stays exactly the same.
Yeah. But they internally get more and more emotional. I think
their lack of emotion is, to a certain extent, becomes that predominant emotion.
Yeah, because
they're very passionate people.
Yeah, because the Daleks are so driven by hate, it becomes natural for most of them to play like really angry all the time. Like, explain, explain! Meanwhile, these Daleks are like, stay in the light, talk. Stay in the light.
These ones are more irritable.
Yeah.
These ones get irritated way easier than modern Dalek that is so quick and excitable.
Yeah, our modern Daleks go from 0 to 10 so fast. These ones go from like 3 to 7.
Let's see, these ones go from 0 to 10, but they have decimals in between each number. So it takes them a lot longer to get to 10.
Yeah, I like these Daleks. I think I can see how they're just a very interesting character.
Well, they're also compelling.
Yeah.
And because I know that we had the discussion before our little break about what made Daleks so captivating for audiences when they first took the screen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of it also has to do with the same sort of mindset or the same headspace of when they saw the first Star Wars film. And what I mean by that not only in like the, oh, they're space, they're spacey. Mm-hmm. Dalek has an astonishing amount of like world building, even in their little underground bunker.
Yeah.
Like there is a lot of design and thought that went into creating this space that has been inhabited by this little pepper pot of a robot.
I mean, when we think about it, they have that we start with this like really interesting set of like this jungle that's been turned to stone
with a metal iguana dog.
Yeah, metal
just
iguana
the
dog.
One. I thought there would be several others. They put all of their money into the one.
Yep.
And did not bother to put it in any other spot.
The only other spot we see it is someone carrying it away.
Same one as before. just FYI.
Yeah. And then we get to the city, which is like this really intricate miniature set that they do a lot with. I mean, it's not like they're going like through the set to like show it to you, but they get pretty close to it. So they put a lot of craft into that for sure.
They put a lot of craft into it for sure. We're watching this on an HD television and you can tell. Yeah, that's a miniature set.
Mm-hmm.
Duh. Could you imagine seeing that on a little, you know, 12 by 12 screen, black and white, fuzzy as hell.
Yeah.
That would have looked so cool. Like, it still looks cool.
Mm-hmm.
It would have looked so much cooler.
Yeah.
Zach, I'd like to petition. I think we should get a CRT TV exclusively for watching Doctor Who. I know what you're thinking. How are we going to watch it on Blu-ray? And that, I haven't gotten that far. And also, I don't yet have an operational CRT TV because all of the ones I've been able to find on Facebook Marketplace are used as set deck and props. None of them are operational.
It's a shame.
This is me manifesting the like from the universe. I really, really want.
The secondhand gods could bring one to you.
Oh my god. Well, because like I have an operational VCR, so I have thought a couple times about getting some classic Doctor Who on VHS.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that'd be really fun for me.
Yeah. Be fun an experiment for us to, because I've never watched it on anything lower def than a laptop. That could be fun.
Hey, all you patrons. I need you to manifest with me. Clap like you're watching a Peter Pan.
I do believe in TVs. I do.
I do believe that Cassie will get a CRT TV with an operational VHS player. I do.
That's an awful mouthful. But yeah.
This is me working with the collective, Zach.
Well, now that we've had the full story, do you have any stronger opinions on our first doctor, Mr. Bill Hartnell?
I like him.
Yeah.
If I had to pick. Also, again, Bailey is making herself known this episode. It is a shame that for the first handful of episodes, he is incapacitated.
Mm-hmm.
He's not doing a whole lot. But as the story progresses and he obviously heals and goes back to the TARDIS and, you know, is discussing with Barbara and Ian and the Thal leaders of what they are going to do.
Mm-hmm.
There is still, I would argue and venture to say that there is still some sort of a Peter Pan like impish quality about this doctor. And I'm realizing now that after seeing him and now almost every iteration.
You've seen every iteration up to where we're at in the show. Yes. You've seen one of every color. You've seen one of every color.
I've seen one of every season.
Yep.
There is an impish quality to the Doctor that I thought was a character choice.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a character choice. But it all starts with Hartnell.
A little bit, yeah.
Like, there are definitely some that embody it more than others.
Yes.
But I think overall there is something to be said of, this is a character who is the smartest person in the room, but allows for others to, you know, be the smartest in the room at times, on occasions.
Yeah.
Fully knowing that if there is a problem, yo, he'll solve it. He's one of the first doctors I've seen, other than 8, where I've thought, I really want to see more. I want to see more of how this character develops, because this is still only the second story.
Mm-hmm.
So the character does develop more and more.
Yeah. So Bill Hartnell had basically built his career off of playing like stern military characters for several years up to this point. And he really wanted to do something different. He was getting typecast and he was getting tired of it.
So this was his whimsy pull.
Basically, someone had offered him this role and it was very different from anything he would offered. And he wasn't entirely clear on why they even, like, it was so different. They didn't understand why they asked him to play the part. But you can tell that he's really like bringing some energy to it that he doesn't get to channel other places.
Mm-hmm.
Like there is like this, you know how sometimes when you meet your grand, I don't want to say this is universal, but in my family,
yeah,
there has certainly been some kind of experience where when my grandparents were parents, they were really like uptight, not great parents. They were a little too either too loose or too strict. They weren't good parents, but they were great grandparents.
Yeah.
Because they're like silly and fun and they are there to like, you know, they want to,
they have grown up as people
or just like whatever part of them wasn't ready to be a parent is suitable to being a grandparent because they don't have permanent responsibility in the same way
they finished cooking.
Yes. So like my grandparents liked to play board games and they liked being silly. And my mom's grandparents especially really liked having arguments in front of her that would make my great grandfather laugh his ass off when my great grandmother got progressively angrier.
Mm.
I see a lot of, I mean, I never met my great grandfather, but from the stories, I picture a lot of him in Bill Hartnell.
Yeah.
I'm just being a little nasty right now, but I'm not trying to be harmful. I'm just sort of doing it because it's funny. It makes me laugh.
There's a coyness, a coyness to his, like, smarmitude.
Yeah, and then
he can easily
turn around and you know portray the intelligence and gravitas of this character, but that is not why the Doctor is who the Doctor is. The Doctor is someone who likes to go adventuring and exploring and not be the smartest guy in the room in like a braggadocious way, but be the smartest guy in the room in a like curious kind of way. And I think Bill Hartnell captures that very well. I think it's more obvious with someone like Patrick Troughton or Matt Smith, who even sort of dress very silly. But Bill Hartnell doesn't do that. Bill Hartnell dresses like a kind of an old guy.
Yes.
But all of them have a very like wacky professor kind of quality. It's just where that dial lands on them is a little bit different.
I think there's also something to... It's a quality that I can say I personally can relate to of the like... I will let the cards fall where they will, but at the end of the day, it is my responsibility to help my friends, to help my family. It is my job to be the person to swoop in and not necessarily save the day, but like in this particular context where we have so many people in the ensemble.
Mm-hmm.
Like there were times where I did think to myself, like the Doctor is getting lost in this story.
Mm-hmm.
Like literally get it. The show is called Doctor Who, not Doctor Where Is He?
And I like that, you know, Ian and Barbara especially have really strong personalities.
Oh, I was saying that this feels more like an ensemble piece.
Yes.
Yes. There were times where the Doctor, I felt like, got a little bit lost, but thankfully we have a bold enough cast of characters where that wasn't distracting from the story because it wasn't like, oh well, we're going to inflate this person's characteristics and we're going to make them the star of this episode. It was the, oh cool, this is more of an ensemble, everybody is pulling their weight in this story.
Yeah, and there's a real like almost family dynamic that they have. Where Susan is where Susan is obviously the child, Ian and Barbara sort of take like on a parental role.
Parental or like aunt and uncle, like a godfather, godmother. Yeah,
there's like a guardianship to them. And then you've got Bill Hartnell, who is, you know, genetically related to Susan, but there's still almost like a father-in-law dynamic that he has to both of them.
I really appreciate though how much Susan is just Susan loves her grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so lovely and heartwarming because I put myself in that position of like, oh, man, could you imagine me and my grandfather on Wily Adventures? And the answer to that is The wildest adventure we went on was one day we went to Target without my grandma.
Ooh.
Yep.
Your grandpa doesn't seem like the kind of guy who could do many things without.
He's a homebot. He's a hobbit. Yeah. Like, he truly, truly is a, like, if Bilbo Baggins decided to just stay in the Shire.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. I like that. Yep. So they wrote Ian in because I mean, it's a little weird because both he and the doctor have like a sciencey vibe.
Yeah.
But because the doctor's intelligence is so wildly above Ian's, the dynamic they eventually take on is that Ian is sort of like the guy ready to punch someone.
Yeah.
And you can even see it here where he's like, he tries to inspire the Thals to take up action in a moment where it's important. Like, it's, he's like, pacifism is great as long as everyone agrees on it. But the second, like, something really important's on the line, maybe step up and fight.
The second that something is really important for on the line, i.e. a piece of ship that did not need to be repaired, and all of this would have simply been avoided if the doctor wasn't being selfish, and I'm still a little bit salty about that.
I do appreciate going back this far to get real confirmation that the doctor has always been a deeply flawed character.
Yes.
Like, he's a little bit of a nasty boy.
He stole the TARDIS.
Yeah, he stole the TARDIS.
He wanted to go out and do his little adventures in his own little, like, space playtime.
Yeah, because I feel like there's a certain level of reverence the show has for the doctor as a character now, which makes a certain bit of sense. He is the only character that has survived the show through all iterations. So there is a certain level of, well, we have to treat him as important because he's the only character that it's always here. Mm-hmm. But I think in that reverence, some people have taken it to mean that the doctor is always right, when the doctor often isn't and is often more interesting when he isn't. I still think very strongly about the Waters of Mars when he becomes the Time Lord victorious and he thinks that he can, that the laws of time will bend to him because because he's the only Time Lord left. That's a very, like, what if we take this little stinky boy doctor and crank that up to 11?
If we make him more pompous.
Yeah.
If we give him an almost godlike mentality.
Yeah, if we take this, like, sneaky little, I'm a boy who took a cookie I wasn't supposed to, and now you advance that cookie to the concept of time itself.
Yeah. All rules of science, physics, time and space bend at my will. I am all powerful. And also, I would like to explore this planet. And nobody can tell me no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They do make a very interesting, like, case for this character's journey to go from just like a guy that wanted to explore the universe. That was his whole goal. His goal was just to go around and travel and see things. And in doing so, became a hero. But this episode is also like a microcosm of the show as a whole, because the episode only even becomes a thing because the doctor's a little nasty boy. But the only reason the Daleks become the nemesis of the Time Lords is because the doctor showed up at all.
Yep.
If the doctor never did all of this, the Time War itself would not have happened.
Yep.
Like, he is,
well,
he is very clearly the domino effect against a lot of the universe.
I did have a thought while we were watching this of how long would Daleks have been rolling around in their little bunker before seeing if they could go outside?
Yeah, because part of their whole plot is getting the anti-radiation medication or the anti-radiation drugs from the Thals, like that.
Drugs.
Yeah, So they take them and they start spinning around because they need radiation to survive now. And they never would have figured that out had they not gotten a hold of those drugs. And so there's a whole part of it where it's like, yeah, the doctor made the Daleks, and I don't know how much it would have been different if he hadn't shown up. Oh, have we had you properly talk about Delia Derbyshire's theme yet? Because this is, I mean, we had the whole episode, but this is our first time, like, watching it.
Intro, though.
Yeah. It's very like weird.
Well, I because I
it's
also,
like abstract and the sounds in it aren't like attached
so
to anything.
Well, because the sounds themselves are manufactured by her using. Mm-hmm. Go listen to that episode. I talk all about it there. But in short, the sounds are all her just fucking with the tape deck in the BBC, not Philharmonic.
Radiophonic.
Radiophonic Workshop. Thank you.
Yes. BBC Radiophonic Workshop. Yeah, it's a real bummer
because
for
it,
sure.
It goes to the credit goes to the workshop as a whole, despite the fact that she
pretty much Delia did it.
Yes. Yeah. And then even Ron Grainer was like, I wrote it, but like she did it.
Yeah.
And they went, but she works at the workshop. And also she's a woman.
So
listen to that episode. But I really think, though, that as a whole, it so perfectly sets the tone for what you're watching is not something that you are familiar with. Mm-hmm. It is not. Granted, there's also something to be said of TV at the time. At this time was still very much stumbling into the like family sitcom. Mm-hmm. Like that really wasn't a thing yet. Mm-hmm. You did, or because this was. Yeah, because I Love Lucy would have been out before this. Granted, that was
in America.
But who fucking didn't love Lucy?
I mean, I know that I certainly love Lucy.
I love Lucy, too.
We have so much in common.
Oh, my God. Hey, we should start a podcast.
We should.
But, you know, TV is still in its infancy. Mm-hmm. Especially TV storytelling was in its infancy because there was still radio and radio stories and there was news channels and, you know, things that you're watching to that capacity. But we are just now coming into an era where there is storytelling being made exclusively for this new, I would call it a streaming device. It's,
yeah.
You know, it's in its first form, so it's big as hell, but, you know. So when you're tuning in and you are aware of some of the other things that BBC makes and you've come to recognize, like, oh, this is more of like an educational, like, you know, if you are aware, I don't necessarily know how much BBC did advertise itself because most of the times programmings like this were brought to you by Modern Man cigarettes.
Well, in the UK, the BBC is funded by taxes. Okay, this is, think of it more like PBS.
Okay.
Yeah. So more like viewers like you.
Thank you. You know, but could you imagine just hearing word of a show that was, it's about time travel. It's a grandfather and his granddaughter, and then these two other guys that are following them. But they're just going off and they're doing all these crazy things. And it's unlike anything you've ever seen. Because it is. It's unlike anything that you would have ever seen. And having a theme song like that being unlike anything you had ever heard, because it wasn't like anything you had ever heard. Mm-hmm. It wasn't instruments making those sounds. Mm-hmm. It was the sound of air raid siren that Delia heard, recorded, and then played backwards. Mm-hmm. She liked found sounds.
I would even say that now there's not really anything on TV that's quite like Doctor Who. I think that's why it survives even like longer seasons.
I think that there is in its like revolutionary sort of way, but we don't see it necessarily broadcast on TV. We now have the luxury of having several different services where things like this are broadcast. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, there are people making content every single fucking day that doesn't look, sound, or smell like anything you'd ever experienced before. You know, but I think about something like, just because we watched it and my brain right now is like latched onto this is its current favorite thing. Mm-hmm. Digital Circus is a perfect example of something that's like, you couldn't have made that in any other time and had it be successful.
Yeah.
That's fucking weird.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of like big meta text happening and just a lot of like very deep emotional like catharsis that happens in every single episode.
Yeah.
Which is a lot, considering that there are six. There are six episodes.
Yep.
But needless to say, I think that, especially at this time, in the state that the world was in, where we're coming out of war, but things are still dicey.
Mm-hmm.
This is as close to escapism that conceivable escapism that you could possibly get.
This is like the biggest form of escapism, where you're like, you're not just going through space, you're going through time, both forwards and backwards. So you can go anywhere at any time. And the only thing that carries you through are like our cast of characters.
Yes.
So the only shows that I can think of that really have that kind of feel, where you could be anywhere next episode.
If you say Magic School Bus.
I guess Magic School Bus could be, well, even then, because that's still like, you always know that next episode you're going to be in the classroom.
You're going to start in the classroom, but you don't know that you're going to be exploring the inside of a human body.
some Star Treks feel that way to me, especially later on when they started adding time travel into Star Trek as a thing. And Quantum Leap, to a certain extent, also feels that way. But even then, the Star Treks, the captain's different. Like, Jean-Luc Picard and Kirk are not the same kind of... They're not even like... Like, two different versions of the Doctor are, like, the same character, but, like, the dials are set differently. Kirk and Picard are not similar in most aspects.
So you're comparing more not the, like, big ideas of the show, but more the specifics of a character.
Yeah, like, that's the thing, is you can...
Or a role that is similar but different.
There it is. You can certainly find shows that will take you to all kinds of different settings every episode. And you can find shows that will carry you through with a cast of... With, like, a set... cast of characters or a lead character through most of their stories. There's not really that many shows that do both of those things.
I could agree with that.
Because even a show like one of the closer ones that I think is like Quantum Leap, where he will be in some different time period and the form of some different character, but there's no other companion with him that he's carried through another episode. It's just Scott Bakula. I think that's very, I think that's why Doctor Who has survived all storms, is that it's such an idea that just it can't.
It's unique.
Yeah, it's a very unique idea. It's got a very unique feel to it, and it's hard to replicate. I do have one important question on my docket, though.
What is that?
So we've established that you feel like this Doctor is kind of a stinky boy.
Yeah.
In your opinion.
Yeah.
Which dog is the stinkiest boy dog?
I was just going to get to that. Welcome to another episode of Who is My Dogter?
Ow. Ow.
Last week's episode, we explored that 8 may or may not be an Afghan hound. Having luscious locks and a long face. Who are we going to say that Bill Hartnell is? Well, thank you so much, Announcer Cassie, for bringing us in with that. That was so much fun of you.
You did an excellent job, Announcer Cassie. Please go back into your hole until the next time we do a classic episode.
Never!
Oh, God.
I've been here always.
Please go back in the closet, Announcer Cassie. I can't have two of you in the house.
I lived in the closet for several years. I'm not going back into that place. You can't take me.
Is that going to be homophobic for putting her back in there?
So sorry about that. I gave her our Nintendo Switch. She's good for like 10 minutes.
She was making the same distressed Dalek sounds that you like.
Help me.
Who is My Doctor? Brought to you by Purina Cat Chow.
Purina Cat Chow. We understand this doesn't make any sense.
That's actually a real product. We are not sponsored by them. Fuck. Okay, that was also me vamping. I don't know what kind of a dog. Definitely something that is very stinky. We've established that.
I've got a picture like a dog that could do like a little side eye or a smirk.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe like a Borzoi.
No, because here's my thing. I need to. So it's a dog that I've seen on my feed. I know it's a real dog, but it looked like a smaller version of a big dog. It's not a corgi, but it's like a.
So you're picking like a smaller dog for Bill. Because I will say T. Kyron, who we've used in reference to all of these.
Hey,
who's my doctors? They have drawn Bill Hartnell as a greyhound.
I could definitely see that.
I definitely think aesthetically I get that because he's very monochromatic.
See, because my thought was like very monochromatic. There are these like little pocket Australian shepherds that are just very, it has to be the kind of dog that I could imagine like stealing off of a dinner plate and then having the whole family be like, fuck, where did all of the turkey go? So I suppose a greyhound is not a bad choice.
Mm-hmm.
Because greyhounds also are canonically very stinky dogs. Particularly like if you go Italian greyhound,
mm-hmm.
like one Kermit marbles. Jenna and Julian's Italian Greyhound mm-hmm. Kermit. See, I feel like he is something that is. Yeah, I think I agree
the
perfectly
greyhound.
With this. Yeah.
Hear me out on some other options. What if he was a beagle?
No, because no. I think that Susan would be the beagle. The number of times that she just sits there going, Grandfather!
Yeah, there's definitely a...
There's a hound dog quality to Susan.
Yeah, I could see that for Susan. Sure.
So yeah, that was this episode of Who is My Doctor?
Yeah, that was a...
We haven't touched upon a lot of very tertiary, like, they were nice to see because they added into the world building, but otherwise they were unimportant.
Mm-hmm.
Such as... the TARDIS food maker? Hello?
You were
what
so...
What in the Wonka? What in the Spy
blueberry
Kids
pie.
Microwave?
It's hot. Blueberry pie. I feel it running in the back of my throat.
Blueberry pie and ice cream.
That's what it is. It's blueberry pie and ice cream. I'm thinking of the...
Tomato soup. I can feel it running down my throat.
That's
yeah.
What I was thinking.
Spit it out. yeah, so if that exists canonically in Doctor Who, Wonka is a Time Lord. Are you fucking kidding me? It just pops out what looks like a little pat of butter that is bacon and eggs. Then they go, oh, yeah, my bacon's a little salty. It's English.
It shouldn't be.
It's English. They never visited that one more time because I thought, oh, sweet, there's going to be something that happens. We're not going to have enough food. And oh, no, it's because Susan didn't bring enough food. Nope. They just wanted to show the cool thing that the TARDIS could do, which I also, as a viewer, went, oh, my God, I'm getting to see what more the TARDIS can do. This is the first fucking time I've got to see the TARDIS be mundane.
Yeah, there's a...
And just very, like, homemakery. Because 9 times out of 10, whenever we've seen the inside of the TARDIS, things are fucking imploding. People are turning into ashen zombie versions of themselves.
Yeah, there's a little bit more of that.
Or there's a time tree or a giant vortex eye that if we don't close it, it's going to explode. Not, I've made you food. TARDIS made you snack. But you like snack.
There's definitely an element to the first Doctor's run where the TARDIS is more of a set. It's not just like the console and they don't really explore much of that.
It's not a passing through zone because there is even that other little like closet, like a.
Yeah, there are times where you will see other rooms, but for the most part, the TARDIS just becomes like its main set.
I don't care.
Yeah.
I want more of the food maker. Because it wasn't a whole blown out kitchen. It was just a little beep, beep, boop, boop, boop.
Set it to K7 and then L5. Beep, boop, boop, beep, boop, boop. I like knowing that one of those settings was eggs and the other setting was bacon.
Oh my God. I want more of that stuff. That's something that I don't feel like we get to see often
mm-hmm.
because it is fucking, it doesn't add to the story. It didn't need to be there.
Yeah, the episodes have to be so tightly paced now with that 45-minute time slot as opposed to these longer serials.
We just kind of have to accept the fact that the doctor and whoever his companion enjoys food from wherever. We have never, ever, ever seen in the modern series the TARDIS go, here's a stick of butter that tastes like pancakes.
Here's a Nutri-Grain bar. It's full of pork.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Please give me more.
Yeah.
I want more of that.
Yeah, it was a fun little detail.
I do like that. I appreciated their creative use of space in this.
In what way?
The labyrinthian hallways that are created by Dalek. That, yes, we know that they're the same hallway set.
Yeah. And that they're often extended by scene painting as opposed to.
However, I believed every fucking second that Daleks went, this hallway is fine. We'll just make 16 more of them.
We do not need to get avant-garde with our design.
But wait, wait, wait. What if doors that swing down and then swing back up on one hinge?
That works for me.
Pretty cool, right? And what else? Hey, hear me out.
I feel like that would look like there's just a guy on the end of the hallway pulling the door up and then down.
No, hear me out, too. Instead of doorways being the same symmetrical shape, what if higher on one side?
Also, our lifts should not have any doors on them.
No doors. Dalek need no doors.
Dalek Anthony gets very nervous if he cannot see us as we go up in the lift.
His object permanence is low.
He thinks that if the door shuts in a lift, we have been exterminated.
Don't say that word around him. He starts freaking out. Bailey does not
hey,
like...
Hey, what are you guys talking about?
I don't think Bailey likes when we're both being Dalek.
Dalek, Anthony, we were not talking about anything.
No, shush, Dalek, Anthony, go back to your games.
We were just laughing at a funny joke we saw on Dalek Leno last night.
It wasn't about you, though.
I am more of a fan of the Late Show with Dalek Letterman.
We'll talk later, then.
And scene.
You're welcome. Another thing. So we did have, like, the silly Dalek hallways, but then we also got the jungle set, which I did like. Something that made me giggle quite a bit was Susan's Muppet run really close up to the camera.
Yeah, where they definitely, like, I think they just had her on, like, a treadmill or something as opposed to, like, having her genuinely run. And they just, like, rolled scenes behind her.
I forgot that I wrote this. The note itself reads, Mutant Daddy Thal Aladon and the Clan of Normal Hotties.
Because there is just, like, when she first steps out of the TARDIS and you see the first Thal, there really is. She really is just like, oh, hi.
But then when you see all of them, you're like, oh, none of these people are, like, exceptionally hot. Like, they all are very good looking and they did a very good job at casting everybody to.
But there are no Sebastian Stans in there.
Oh, my God. There's maybe one where I went, oh, like.
You can get it.
Like, if I was seeing this person on the TV and I was a high school girl, I would absolutely from there, like, that moment forward be like, oh, my God.
I'm sure it was the one that was on the rock just, like, lounging about.
Yeah, with only one word every. Yeah. Yeah, I think those were all of the, like, main point, not important, like, big brain talking points, but just little things like that and, like, the way that the Daleks gun affect the environment around it. Just little things like that that really make me go, I think 60s television is the superior television and I will die on this rock.
There's definitely, like, a scrappier
Like, we have to do what works.
Do you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of that one SNL bit, the cat laser cats. Mm. It feels like that. It feels very, like, purposefully homemade in a way that is so unbelievably charming.
Yeah.
Because there is a lot of work and effort that goes into making something like this look as real as possible with, you know, given the time that it's made and time constraints around it. Mm-hmm. Whereas now we get shows, no, all tea, all shade. You get shows like She-Hulk, where it's like there are some times where she looks amazing. And then others where you go, ew, you're made of Play-Doh. You have synthetic CG skin that is pulling me out of this. It's pulling away the illusion and reminding me that what I'm watching was a quickly made and manufactured television show.
Mm-hmm. Which is interesting because I think when it's something like the 60s, we know that it was all made by hand and we could tell that it's janky. Like we could, like you and I could both tell that that little Megaton lizard doggo thing was just a statue.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, there was never a living creature.
There was no part about it because even a living creature does not stand perfectly symmetrical on all fours moments before it dies. Look at any museum with taxidermy.
With CG, that's still like made by a person, but because it's not made by hand. Well, I mean, I guess it is made by hand in the sense that your hand is on the mouse.
Oh my God, I forgot that you are so pro. You're very pro CG. I am not.
Well, I'm not pro or anti CG or practical. I think both have their place. Like there are certain things practical can't do, and there are certain things that CGI shouldn't do.
Like weld a metal dog lizard. Yes.
But it's interesting that, you know, that I think we have an innate human reaction to something that we can tell is handmade versus CG, which is made in a computer, which actually, instead of feeling endearing and not quite up to snuff, what it becomes is, that's uncanny valley.
Yeah.
And so I think there's an interesting dichotomy there with, especially with newer Who, where the CG was still getting worked out, especially early on.
Well, the Autons.
I was thinking more of the Slovene when they had them like sprinting through the.
Shut up! We don't talk about those. No, but there is something. There is something about. It's especially when you do have such a big brain show like Doctor Who, but then you can see where the flats are painted and you can tell that it's a miniature, like a miniaturized city set that we are supposed to believe is a real thing. And in that moment, you're like, yep, I'm buying all of this. Mm-hmm. I am absolutely accepting that this is the world. Whereas now in modern Who, we don't get to see. We don't have the regeneration being either a slow fade out and then a fade back in with a different person.
Yeah.
You know, the regeneration that we see now is the Doctor exploding into this like yellow orange sparkle energy.
Mm-hmm.
And then wearing the clothes that he was just in but moments ago.
Yeah.
But bigger. and you know, there is something to be said of like it. Is really remarkable that we can conceptualize things that are otherwise, I can't think of anything in nature that explodes into stardust and then reforms. So it's awesome that you get to actually physically see that.
Yeah.
But there is also something to be said of like, you know, I
watching someone fade into another person is also.
Yeah.
Very,
or like in Bewitched, anytime like Endora pops in and out of the Stevens like bedroom, the Endora is the mother.
No,
she just kind of
pops in. Yeah.
The way that they do that practically is just by having her there 1 minute, gone the next, by having her stay perfectly still and then freeze for a second and then disappear off camera.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's so fun.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a level of simplicity that comes to pure practicality. And I do think there is some charm to even this level of like 60s schmaltz.
But, you know, I'm really glad.
Overall, the one thing, and I'll bring it back. I'll wrap it all back around. The one thing that I am so happy that has not changed between now and when we first see them are my nasty, nasty little boys.
In fact, the only thing that's changed about them is that they've gotten nastier.
Oh my God. They're covered in grime now, or they're Kia Souls. Yep. But overall, I am very pleased that we have watched this particular First Doctor story, and that Dalek, no difference. Dalek
they
is
got
light,
in one. They got they
lightning
got
in a bottle, and they went, whoop, that's not changing. No.
Well, I am really glad that you enjoyed this story, because not right away, but in a few episodes, we're basically going to watch it again when we watch.
Hopefully I will have forgotten it by then.
We're going to watch the Peter Cushing movie, Doctor Who and the Daleks, which is an adaptation of this story.
Jeez, Pete.
Only it's about half the length because it's a 90-minute movie.
Okay.
Which really goes to show this did not need to be 7 episodes.
No. No.
The production team behind the movie knew it didn't need to be 7. It didn't need to be 3 hours long. It could be an hour and a half. Yep. And it's fine.
Yep.
But next up, now that you've seen all the doctors, now that you've got all of the ingredients for the different recipes we could do here
for Dr. Pie,
we're gonna have some multi-doctor stories coming up next. Next up, we're gonna do the three doctors, with the first, second, and third doctors all featuring for the 10th anniversary special. So we will be doing that on the next episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Get out of here, announcer Cassie.
But I like it here.
No, get.
Please.
I'll call your dad.
Please. You can call my dad? That's impossible.
I was born in an abyss.
I exist only as a figment of Cassie's imagination.
Then why can I hear you?
Whoosh.
Whoosh is indeed.
Whoosh. It should have been whoosh. Fuck. Announcer, come back. Come back.
Ingratiate. By which I mean, thank you all for listening to another episode. We hope you all enjoyed it. This means that Cassie has officially seen all Doctors 1 through 11. Now we get to play in the space a little, have some crossovers, wrap them together in a delicious Doctor Taco, which means next week we're watching the three Doctors. If you want to hear that when it comes out next week, be sure you are subscribed wherever you're listening now so you get updates for every episode in the future. If you'd really like to support us, you can find us over on Patreon at patreon.com/whoismydoctor, where for as little as $1 a month, you can get access to the episodes of this podcast a whole week early. You can also find us on Blue Sky Threads, Instagram, and Twitter over at WIMDPod. That's WIMDPOD. Special thanks go out to our Big Daddy Dalek patrons, Andrew Blewett, David Gansel, Travis Aiken, Julian Erlebacher, and Daniel Lindgren. We'll see you all next Tuesday, because your Tuesdays are now Whose Days.